Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Comic Boom DC Weekly Spotlights. I'm your co-host, Jace.
And I'm Rocky Comic Boom. Good to be here.
And yeah, thanks for joining me, Rocky. As always, these have become my favorite episodes we do every week for you viewers on YouTube, for your listeners on the audio podcast. If you're first time joining us, just a quick reminder, Rocky releases it on his podcast or on his YouTube channel, Comic Boom. So Comic Boom with the exclamation point. Be sure you're liking him, liking the videos on YouTube and smashing that subscribe button. Or if you listen to it on any of the podcast platforms on the Comic Source podcast, whatever works for you, we're happy to do it. Just a reminder, we are going to start putting these out on Tuesdays because, hey, that's when you guys want it. And we understand that that's when the books drop and a lot of you get a chance to read them on the day they drop and you want feedback and you're curious what other people think. So there are full spoilers. We're going to go deep into the details on these four issues we're talking about today. So if you haven't had a chance to read these particular issues, you don't want to be spoiled. Go out, read them this week whenever you get a chance to pick them up, and then come back later and give it a listen. And be sure you let us know your thoughts about the issues in the comments below. You can comment on the webpage of the podcast, or you can reach out on social media to either myself or Rocky. Show notes have where you can find us, or if you look in the comments section, Rocky has that there, as well as timestamps. If you're just wondering about one specific issue, maybe you've only read one and you can't wait to hear what we have to say. So Rocky does go through and take the time to do timestamps. So if you're wondering about which specific issue we're going to mention, so we're going to go into there's seven DC titles that come out today. We're going to go into detail on four of them, and we'll give just a brief. Maybe a sentence or two about the other three. So we're going to be talking about Teen Titans Academy number one, Harley Quinn number one, Batman Detective Comics number 1034, and Batman Superman number 16. So what do you want to start with, Rocky? Anything that catches your fancy?
Why don't we start with why don't we just start with Teen Titans Academy since I know you and I were probably not the biggest fans of it, but I think that it's DC's has a lot of hopes on it, and I think it's going to be attracting a lot of readership, or at least maybe that's just my sort of perception, but it does seem I think they're putting a lot of stock into it, so.
I would agree with that. And case in point, they put one of their better artists on it, their better art teams. So I think you're right. And I will say that I thought it was, and it's probably because the writer Tim Sheridan is not trying to shove, 10 pounds of story in a 5 pound bag. I did think it was a significant improvement over the future state Teen Titans story that we got. So Tim Sheridan is the writer. Rafa Sandoval handles the pencils. His normal inker, Jordi Tarragona, his usual colorist, Alejandro Sanchez. So that's one of DC's most consistent art teams, and I think they're top quality. So they're on the book, and then Rob Lee handles the letters. So give us your thoughts, Rocky. What'd you think about this issue?
I actually thought there was some decent character work here. I thought Tim Sheridan introduced us. We fleshed out some of the characters, the main characters, or a lot of the new students that are going to form part of Titans Academy. I still think it's struggling. It struggles a bit. There's a couple of things that just sort of rub me the wrong way. I would have liked to have had a little bit more of a buildup. I don't really understand why Teen Titans Academy needs to exist. I find it really odd that parents would send their kids to a school where you don't know the identities of the teachers. It's Mr. Nightwing, it's Mr. Star. It just seems really odd to me. And then I realize that they're trying to do the whole, sort of like the mutant thing, like the school for gifted youngsters. That's really what this is. But it's really odd that they want to recruit young children to teach them how to fight mega 11, mega level bad guys. And I don't know. I thought I was I've I had a hard time wrapping my head around it. But in any event, it on the one hand, We have Nightwing and Starfire and Changeling, Beast Boy and Cyborg. All of them are teachers now. And, you know, I guess they can teach, but it feels a little bit weird to me. I don't know. But I guess they're going for the X-Men feel, but I've never been much of an X-Men fan, but I guess it's different. But now seeing them all as teachers and all these students and now there's this red X in the background, all of a sudden we were teased Red X in Future State, but now it feels like another issue of Future State to me because all of a sudden they talk about Red X as if Dick Grayson's already been Red X in the past. I'm not aware of that story. That story's not been told. And so there's clearly some mystery here still already that it still feels like a Future State issue to me, but there is some character work here. And overall, I guess I'm even kind of curious to know who this Red X maybe is. I clearly somebody is playing along and teasing. It's Dick Grayson's birthday. So in the Future State issues, we got flashbacks in Future State to Dick Grayson Nightwing's birthday. And this issue starts off with Nightwing's birthday, where all the students and the teachers, fellow teachers, are throwing him a birthday party. And he's given the gift of the Red X mask, which is a bad reminder to Dick Grayson of a time of his life when wearing masks was a bad thing. And that he goes in and he gives a speech to the kids about, you know, you got to know who you really are. And it's okay to wear a mask unless you look in your mirror and you see somebody different staring back at you. And I really thought it was off for that. That's not a speech I see you giving kids on their first day of class. You know, it's like, are you really want kids to go to it and learn how to be like, first of all, everybody knows who the students are, because I'm sure that the roster is public information. So it's not like they can wear a mask afterwards anyway. So the whole thing seems kind of a little bit odd to me, but admittedly, I'm overthinking it. I think this has potential, but I do think it was rushed. And I think that maybe the better stories are yet to come, because I think I would have liked to have seen more of an organic buildup to why this school needs to exist in the first place and moving forward. But I don't know, Jace, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you're right with the whole X-Men feel and what they're trying to accomplish. And it's interesting, right? Like back in the early 80s when Teen Titans really hit with the Wolfman and Perez version of it, it was the hottest selling title next to X-Men. Like it and X-Men were neck and neck. They were the two big titles, and they were very different. But they were both titles that kind of showed the soap opera feel of comics and relationships. And it was more than just the, fighting the villain of the month. It was so much about relationships and the interpersonal relationships, and both those comics really showcased that. So it's interesting. X-Men has sort of continued on that path, whereas Teen Titans, you know, it couldn't sustain for whatever reason. And now it seems like they're trying to come back to it. Why they're doing this? I mean, it must be an editorial decision. I'm not sure. It feels different, I guess. If there's anything I can think, it's that, well, there's been so many different versions of Teen Titans ever since the New 52 started. And, you know, they've brought on these new younger characters and they want to keep going with that. But, you know, the original Teen Titans are still beloved. You know, when you talk about Starfire and Nightwing and, Roy Harper and Donna Troy and such. But time has passed. They're certainly not teens anymore. You can't call it Teen Titans. And we know that in Rebirth, we had Titans and Teen Titans, Teen Titans being the younger team led by Damian Wayne. And then you had Titans when Wally West came back and whatnot. So I think this is, they're thinking if we do this, it's a way to have the original characters, to have the younger generation, and then introduce even newer characters and have a way to have all kind of three generations in one book, which is very X-Men like.
Didn't it remind you of, it reminded me of Saved by the Bell. Like, you know, it's like Saved by the Bell reunion. It's like, yeah. What are the odds that every single student at Saved by the Bell grows up to be a teacher and is teaching the next generation? And that's why it just felt a little off to me that every single previous member of the Teen Titans is also a teacher for a future generation. It was just, it seems, I get why they're doing it, but I guess the very thing that made Teen Titans different from the X-Men now seems to have been discarded, and they're doubling down on it, I guess. But
Yeah, and it's not like the X-Men were shown teaching all these classes back in the day. Yeah, they once in a while you'd see it, but much different here. So they're trying to do something different, and maybe it'll work, and maybe it won't. It's too soon to tell. But there were moments in the book that I liked. I specifically like the moment between Donna Troy and Brick, who seems to be, a character we know like very little about. Seems to be very powerful. Seems to have sort of a chip on his shoulder, or something's going on there. It's another one of the mysteries that you alluded to. I like that. I like Brick. I'm interested in learning more about him. I like the interaction between him and Donna Troy, who, as opposed to being a teacher, I guess is more of a guidance counselor kind of thing. So yeah, the other thing I found interesting was, there's all these rumors going around that Red X was going to turn out to be Roy Harper, and then we see right at the end of the issue. And again, spoilers if you haven't read it, and you don't want to know, don't want any clues to who Red X might be. We see him at the end in that very mask that somebody gave Nightwing as a birthday present, and then it got misplaced. He set it down somewhere, and this person obviously took it, put it on, but it's a person of color. So clearly not Roy Harper, and who it might turn out to be, I got nothing. I have no idea. So there's that mystery going on as well. As I always say, you got to give a series at least 2 issues, because first issues are so hard to do. There was a lot here, and like Rocky said, I agree that Sheridan did a good job of introducing a big wide cast of characters. Clearly, it's going to be an ensemble book, which is going to make it tough for him, especially as a newer comic writer, to give everybody adequate space on the page when we know comic real estate is so precious. So that's going to be a challenge for him. I'm going to
We
try
would
to go.
be negligent. We would be negligent if we didn't mention Nightwing and Starfire maybe getting together. They go on a date on the end of this. So
Yeah, that's interesting as well. But then, that flies in the face of what Tom Taylor's doing over in the Nightwing book. So it's hard to say what exactly is going on. I'm going to give it one more issue to see if it grabs me. This one, I'm kind of in. I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't think it was great. It's somewhere in the middle. And I'm going to give it one more issue, not necessarily because I feel compelled to from the story. There are a few things I'm curious about, probably not enough to pick up a second issue if I was spending money on it, but I'll read the preview copy of the second issue and see where it goes. The other thing that I'll mention is as to why they did this in terms of in the story, I think we're going to find out it was all Dick Grayson. Right, we know in Nightwing he got that big check from Alfred, billions of dollars, and there was a line in here that one of the students referred to him as, what do you call him, Daddy Moneybags or something like that, referred to Nightwing as that. So it's clear to me that Nightwing is trying to get to give back to the younger generation by establishing this academy, and is using the Alfred Pennyworth money to do that. So, I mean, it's a noble cause, but I mean, I do agree with you there. You got to wonder about, but you wonder the same thing in the Marvel universe with people that go to the X school. Would parents really do that? Although that school for gifted young, that's on the down low, right? It's the school for gifted youngsters, and it's not necessarily public knowledge. Whereas Titans Academy, you know that people going there have power. So it's a little bit different dynamic. So I thought it was okay. I think if you're a big Teen Titans fan, you probably enjoy it more than I would have, and you may be excited for the series going forward. So be sure and let us know in the comments or on social media. But yeah, I thought it was okay in terms of the story. The art, I thought, it Rafa Sandoval, Jordi Tarragona, Alejandro Sanchez, it's up to their usual level, which was nice to see, because we know, I mean, you look at this and you look at the art in Future State, and it's almost night and day. It's almost hard to believe this is the same three art, members of the art team giving us the art, because it's so good here as opposed to what we saw in Future State, which was so rushed and
Rushed.
not as polished. So I just think it goes to prove what we had said all along during Future State. They just didn't have a lot of time to work on it, because the art here is beautiful. Colors, line work, textures, everything works, especially for me, the big 2-page spread we get with the seniors, if you will. If you consider this a high school, the senior class, they're the Teen Titans that get to go out and fight, so we see Bunker, and we see the Wallace West Flash, we see Crush, And
We
they're
feel,
out
yeah.
fighting and Red Arrow and yeah, I mean that
And
double
Billy
bacon split.
Batson and Miguel of the H style.
Yeah, Miguel Montez. Yeah, and that it's gorgeous. It
It felt like a school. It felt like a school. I got
yeah.
that school, that cafeteria scene. It felt like an academy. And so it definitely has that feel. So I think it hits where it needs to hit. Just a quick comment that I don't know if it's a trick on the colors, but I never saw the you said that Red X is a person of color. It's funny, it never even occurred to me when I look at that now. When I look at the coloring, it does. Yeah, it's probably a black person or a Latino,
Yeah.
but potentially, you never know with lighting, right? It
Yeah, that's
kind of
true.
tricks you. You could kind of think, well, is it what is it, a Latino, a black person, or could it be just a dark skinned or white, a darker tan white person? It's kind of hard to tell. So it's kudos to the colorist. Who's the colorist here?
Alejandro Sanchez is the
Ah, did a
colorist
good
that,
job.
yeah, it's the same colors that normally works with Tarragona and Sandoval. So yeah, art is top notch for sure. So anything else to add about this one, Rocky, before we move on?
No, I just, I'm intrigued. I'm not, like I say, I'm not a huge fan of the Red X. I find Red X to be a sort of an uninteresting distraction, but hopefully it'll become interesting as because clearly they're doubling down on it. So hopefully I'm on board. I'll be there for the next issue. So.
All right, and we'll be sure to let you guys know what we think of the next issue when it drops. So let's move on to Harley. I kind of want to talk about Harley Quinn. This one sort of surprised me. So
Sure.
Rocky and I are both big fans of Stephanie Phillips, the writer, Riley Rosimo, the artist, less so. Yvonne Plasencia does the colors, Darren Bennett on letters. So I'm not a big Harley guy. Rocky's much more of a fan of the character than myself. So but it was Stephanie Phillips, and even though I don't care for Riley Rossmo's very stylized type of art, because of Stephanie Phillips, I was like, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to see how much I like it. And I was surprised that I didn't hate it. Even though it was Harley Quinn and Rossmo art, I didn't hate it. Wouldn't go to so far as to say I like it. So for me, it's kind of right there with the Teen Titans Academy, maybe slightly below for me in terms of what grade I would give it, but I didn't hate it. But I know you're a big Harley guy, Rocky. What did you think?
Well, strangely enough, I do actually think that Riley Rosmo, if ever there was a character that I could become more accustomed to his particular unique style of art, it is actually Harley Quinn. I found myself, I was, I didn't stop reading this halfway through because I didn't like the art. It actually worked for me. That I think he's got a very unique Harley, but you get a sense, that this is a Harley Quinn comic. And I have to admit, there was one page here that Riley Rossmo, I thought, did a fantastic job on. And it's a page where all the panels on the page are within Batman's cape. I thought it was a beautifully illustrated page. And it's trying to find it here, but it's one where it shows Batman is fighting. He's chasing the ugly duckling. The ugly duckling, of course, that's Harley Quinn's new sidekick now. She calls her new sidekick the ugly duckling that she hopes to eventually turn into a swan, meaning, I guess, her new sidekick. And in any event, he's chasing her. And there's a beautiful, it's actually, I thought, a beautifully artistically rendered scene where all the panels and all the fighting that Batman is doing, he's actually doing it within the shadow of his own cape. And it looks pretty good. And so Riley Rossmo, I'll give him credit that he's a guy that he definitely has taken some bullets to his artistic style from others, but yet he's passionate about what he does. And hey man, he's got his style. It is what it is, and he makes it work. And the story here, I like. I was a little bit disappointed in it. I was only because Stephanie Phillips has hit it out of the park so well in early on, but she definitely took the story, established the story that Harley Quinn wants to create a situation where she wants to redeem herself. She wants to. She there's a wonderful scene where she's got all these strings and Venn diagrams on a wall, and Batman is, tracks her down and saying, "What are you doing?" And it's like she's actually I mean, ironically enough, her and Batman have a lot in common. I mean, they're both basically broke, but there's a wonderful scene where Harley Quinn thinks Batman is still rich and she's expecting Batman's going to pay her, you know, like he,
well, yeah, you know, she wants to put some granite countertops in her apartment.
That's right. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, I work with Batman. I gotta look the role. Right. I mean, anyways, Stephanie Phillips, to her credit, is very good. She just immediately, just like she did in the Future State issue, she captures the dialogue so well here, and the dialogue just works. And Riley Rosmo, whatever one feels about his particular artistic style, he's got, I think he's really good. He's very creative with his layouts. Every page is different in terms of the paneling. And he's very good at, if you actually look at the different expressions he puts on Batman's face, he's got all his faces have a very unique they're very angular but they're very expressive. He's good at showing that emotion when he's got the time to draw the panels. And in particularly, he's really good at drawing the exaggerated emotions and facial expressions on Harley Quinn. And as I said, this just really works here. And I have to say, I'm on board. I really even like the cover. I like his cover, and I like his cover more than the variant cover, quite frankly, because it's different. I like the new logo. I like the dressing, the dress design for Harley Quinn, and the logo. It's bright. It's beautiful. It's in your face. I love. I mean, anyways, generally speaking, I'm positive, man. I don't know. How do you feel? Yeah, there it is. I think it's a good cover.
Yeah, I was saying that. Yeah, I thought that cover really worked really well, as opposed to the Derek Chu variant, or I even saw there's a Shannon Mayer retailer variant where Harley looks underage, and it's just creepy to me because of she looks so young. So yeah, the Rosmo art does work, actually. And as much as I'm not a big fan of his style, I've talked about it at length, there are certain stories and certain characters where his style works very well. The Steve Orlando, Riley Rosmo 12-issue Martian Manhunter, for example, his art works well because Martian Manhunter is this, amorphous blob, basically, when you come down to it. He's a shapeshifter. And so the stylized sort of alien feel of Rosmo's art works really well. Here, one thing it seems like he's done, at least for me, when I was going through the book, is the backgrounds in this book, it seems like he's calmed down a lot, especially in comparison to like the first issue of the Future State Legion of Superheroes, where it just felt like he was going crazy with the pencil. Here, there's a lot of pages where the backgrounds are minimal. And that's not to say that he doesn't do any work in the backgrounds, but you know, the scene here where Harley's confronting somebody in the rain who's yelling at her and calling her a circus freak, get out of Gotham. The backgrounds here, they're relatively light and they work, and it makes your eye focus on the characters and the emotion that you see both in the expression of this gentleman who's calling Harley a circus freak and saying that she doesn't belong here, as well as Harley herself, you know, who's getting upset. What did you call me? And you can sort of see her the old versions of herself and the way they would react. Hey, he called us a clown, you know, and she's gonna flip out on this guy. And she's trying to make sure that she listens to her better angels and does a good job of being a hero. You have to understand that Harley's coming back into a place where she went through a lot of trauma with this relationship with the Joker, and she's trying to be a hero now. You know, she says as much to Batman, but this is a challenge for her. I mean, it really speaks to the growth and evolution of the character. And I think Stephanie Phillips really understands that because I didn't read much about or read into any of this sort of challenge or obstacle that this would be for Harley when she came back to Gotham. You know, we saw her come back in Joker War. She's shown up in issues of Batman. This hasn't been addressed. And so I'm glad that Stephanie Phillips is addressing it here, because Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, when they took over Harley, they took her out of Gotham. And Jimmy was the first one to say, the reason we did that is we wanted to get her away from what people associated her with and establish her as her own character. you know, they put her in Coney Island, and they had a different supporting cast, and it had nothing to do with Gotham City. And they did a great job of establishing her to the point where she became more popular than ever, and she's kind of the fourth pillar of the DC universe. We've talked about it a lot here. We maybe in popularity more popular than Wonder Woman or Superman, maybe second only to Batman in terms of popularity. The argument could be made. So what's the next step? Well, the next step in her evolution is maybe now let's take her back to Gotham, right, and see how she handles that. Is she really more than just the former sidekick of the Joker? Well, my argument to that or answer to that question would be yes, she very much is. But this is kind of the last thing that she needs to overcome. Can she go back to Gotham where she started, where all that trauma exists, and transcend all that and still be who she is? The other thing, Stephanie Phillips, she's walking a fine line between sort of the zaniness that Harley has always had and more of a mature Harley, the kind of the Harley that I prefer that we've seen in things like Joker Harley Criminal Sanity or the Batman White Knight Harley Quinn. But there still is that zaniness here. You can't get away from it. And there are some comedic moments, which you kind of expect in a Harley Quinn comic. So I think Stephanie Phillips does an incredible job. And I think, again, to give Rosmo credit, his art is less chaotic. It's less frenetic in this particular issue than I've seen before. And so I think if he keeps up this style, that it can work very, very well. And you see it here again in the art with Harley and Batman, where the backgrounds are sort of minimal, and it works really well. And here's that diagram that Rocky was talking about with all the lines and you know, speaking to the maturity of her. You know, she tells Batman, I you know, after the Joker war, I can't help but feel responsible. I enabled that clown for years, and you know, I'm here to make up for it. You know, I figure I've got a lot to make up for. My records are officially clean thanks to my time with the Suicide Squad. And so it's time for me to go beyond that, right? Like, if you want to think about it in terms of the kind of accounting terminology, she was in the red, right? She owed a debt. And now with what's happened in the Suicide Squad, her debt's been paid, but now she needs to go up into the black and start becoming a positive force. So she's no longer in the negative. Maybe she's at that neutral site. Hey, let's see if I can be a positive force. That's what it means to be a hero. So again, I think it's an interesting take. I think Stephanie Phillips is the right writer to do it, and I think Rosmo's art is pretty solid here, and it definitely works for the series.
And you might want to note that on that diagram she has on the wall, at the center of it is the name Pam, and because a lot of this intersects with Poison Ivy, who we know from we know from the pages of Batman, Poison Ivy is being experimented upon in order to create a new drug. So we know at some point that's going to come to fruition too. So I like that there's a little bit of overlap between the various storylines there for those of us who are a little bit more inclined to pick out those Easter eggs.
Yeah, exactly. And when Batman reaches for it, because it's at the center, like you said, she says, no, I'm not ready for that one yet. So yeah, there's a lot to like here. All that being said, I'm probably not even on board for the second issue of Harley Quinn, and not because
after all that, and not
because I think, you know, with Teen Titans Academy, I'm not sure that it's good enough for me to enjoy it and to keep reading it and to be invested. With Harley Quinn, I know the quality is there. I you know, with Teen Titans, there's still a level of I need to give it another issue because I'm not sure what to expect. With Harley Quinn, I think this particular issue that Rosmo and Phillips both have done an incredible job of letting us know what this series is going to be. And it's a wonderful example of how to do a first issue correctly. But all that being said, what we're going to get of Harley Quinn with Rosmo's art, it's just not something that's for me. I'm just not a fan of Harley Quinn. So it's not that I already know what it's going to be and know what to expect. And I think it's going to be a good quality. And I think anybody who's a Harley fan is going to absolutely love this. But I'm just not a Harley fan. So I don't feel like I need a second issue to tell me what's the quality going to be like of the series. I know what to expect and I know the quality is going to be good. It's just not something that interests me. So don't think by any means, everybody that I'm telling you, don't read this. It's not good. No, if you're a Harley fan, you're going to love it. I'm just not a Harley fan, if that makes sense. But Rocky is, and I think, you know, he said it himself. He's all in for this. So let's move on to Detective Comics. This had a really interesting last page of the backup story, which kind of surprised me because I, you know, the backup story is the Damian Wayne story. And again, much like Harley, I'm not a big fan of Damian Wayne, so I was kind of reading it reluctantly. I didn't particularly find the backup story with Damian Wayne compelling when we had it in the back of the Batman issue. So I was kind of eh. And then all of a sudden, Williamson threw me for a loop, and now I may be. I can't believe I'm going to say it, but I may be checking out his Robin a solo series with Damian Wayne, not because I care about Damian Wayne, but because I care about the other character, and we'll get there in a second. But let me give the credits first. It's called The Neighborhood Part One, the main story, written by Mariko Tamaki, art by Dan Mora, colors by Jordi Belair, letters by Adita Bidikar. And then we have the backup story with Damian Wayne. It's written by Joshua Williamson. Art is by Gleb Melnikov, who's going to be, that's the same team you're going to get in the regular Damian Wayne Robin series that's coming out. Letters are by Troy Pateri. So there is no colorist, which tells us that Gleb Melnikov is doing his own colors. So and the art is pretty solid. What were your thoughts here, Rocky? What do you think of the main story?
Mariko Tamaki, I don't recognize this writer, man. I continue to give her compliments. I wasn't a fan of her for the longest time, and now all of a sudden in Future State she bloomed and she continues to impress me with Detective Comics. I really enjoyed this. The main story was excellent. I'm right on board. I thought that a lot of this stuff, we know what's going to happen with Future State, and what impresses me about this is that I know how a lot of these plot lines, I know where this is all headed, and yet I'm actually still intrigued. I'm still interested as to what the heck is going on here. And she does a really good job of sort of pulling me in. I mean, we start off here with Mayor Nagano. He's campaigning for mayor. He's got a vision for Gotham, and he's giving, you know, Bruce Wayne, even though Bruce Wayne is broke, he still has an inside track. So he's invited to this gala, even though he's not a billionaire anymore. He still has I guess a certain clout that he gets invited to these various things. And because of that, he ends up going there, and it gets attacked by a lot of the minions that are leftovers from the Joker War. They end up attacking this campaign dinner put for Mayor Nagano. And it, but Bruce Wayne right away, Batman are you know, right away figures that it's just a distraction, that these party crashers are likely working for somebody bigger. And of course, ultimately reveals that ultimately they are. And as a result of that, let's put it this way. What I liked is that when he ends up at the back, I like his rapport as he, it's called The Neighborhood. And that's what I like about it is that you get to know this new neighborhood and you get to meet everyone along with Bruce Wayne. And I actually quite enjoyed it. This was actually because, you know, for some reason, whenever we were exposed to Batman, we're not often, this feels more like a Bruce Wayne. I feel like I'm getting to know Batman more through the eyes of Bruce Wayne as opposed to just straight up Batman. That's why I'm kind of enjoying this. And Tamaki has a, she's very good at dialogue. Dan Mora's art is fantastic. And not only that, I don't know if you noticed on that first page there, but there is like the Huntress was actually hidden on top of the building, and she doesn't play a role. She's actually on the first page. She's on the building. She's actually in the building. I don't know if you noticed that. It's but you see her
Yeah,
there.
yep, she's
And
here.
but yeah, she doesn't actually play a role in the in the issue. And anyways, I thought it was quite interesting. You see here. But in any event, I was, like I said, I'm, even though I can't, we know where this is going, there's so many moving parts with Batman and Detective with Manigano, and we know this is going to be a Simon Saint, and we know that this is going to lead to the magistrate, but we don't actually know exactly how we're going to get there because there's so many moving parts that we know from Future State, and we know that the future's not written in stone. And but I got to say that you don't even need to have read Future State to have enjoyed this. You can enjoy this hitting the ground running right from the beginning, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, I have sort of mixed feelings. It definitely feels, maybe more so than any book I've read, a continuation, at least in tone, of what Future State was. Like, Detective Comics in tone, if not in narrative, this feels exactly like the story that Mora and Tamaki were telling in Dark Detective, Future State Dark Detective, in terms of tone. Obviously, the timeline doesn't line up. You could think of this as a prelude to that, but as Rocky just alluded to, future's not written in stone. We don't know that we're necessarily going to get there. I do agree that the best parts of the book are Bruce Wayne getting to know his neighbors. He has neighbors for the first time, in terms of people that he interacts with and is close enough to see, living in an apartment rather than a big house with these grounds and your closest neighbor is miles away. So that's really cool to see Bruce Wayne. It's been a long time, I'd argue, since the late 70s, early 80s, that Bruce Wayne himself has been a character in a Batman book instead of just the mask that Batman wears to allow him to do the things that he needs to do. And Bruce Wayne himself has become less and less important over the last few years because he's just Batman all the time. But I've gone on record as saying I'm not a big fan of the magistrate and the fascist overtones. I'm just kind of burnt out on that sort of storytelling. And I think, honestly, Mayor Nagano's a fool. And we see here, the whole reason he's hosting this fundraiser, he's won the mayorhood or whatever you want to call it, the mayorship. And here he is still hosting fundraisers. Why does that sound familiar? Here it's fifth one already. Give me more money. Give me more money. For what? Are you actually going to use this to improve the city? He himself hasn't even finalized his plans. He ran on an anti-vigilante platform, and then here these party crashers crash the party, and who saves the day? Batman. And he can't understand, where's his security? Where's his SWAT team? Where's the Gotham PD? It's clear there's somebody behind the strings or behind the scenes pulling the strings to show that, hey, the what is in place isn't adequate enough. And we know who that is. We know it's Simon Saint who delayed the SWAT team or did whatever he needed to do. He probably was behind the party crashers attacking in the first place to show that, hey, Gotham's police department, Gotham's SWAT team, what's already in place is not enough. And since you ran on this anti-vigilante platform, you can't rely on Batman either. He's a bad guy. Who can step in? Oh, of course it's going to be the magistrate. So, Like Rocky said, we know where this leads to. So that stuff is kind of paint by the numbers. You can see it all. It's very predictable. If we didn't have Future State and we didn't know about the magistrate and all that, then there would be a little more intrigue to it. You might still realize somebody is behind the scenes pulling the strings, but we might not necessarily know why. But because we have that foreknowledge of what's going to happen in the possible future of Future State, all that intrigue is sort of taken away. So that's where I kind of have mixed feelings. I love the Bruce Wayne aspect of it. And that we're finally starting to see some consequences of him losing his fortune, but some of the other stuff, it just feels like you're going through the motions. And I just find Nagano's like, I don't understand how somebody smart enough to, and dedicated enough to be a Gotham City police officer and one of the straight ones, not one of the corrupt ones, and smart enough to run and win the election for Gotham City mayor could logically in his head think that Batman is a bad thing. It just doesn't make sense to me. So there's a little bit of incongruity for me there. But I'm still on board. I mean, it's still, like Rocky said, the dialogue is great. For me, Tamaki has been somebody whose writing has been inconsistent for me. There's times I've loved it, like on She-Hulk, and there's other times like Wonder Woman where it hasn't been so great. But between the Dan Mora art and this, just this portrayal of Bruce, and he feels much more on his own here than he has in a long time as
Well, I
well.
mean, he's digging in a cave. That's what's sort of like, I thought that was really, this guy's supposed to be broke, but you still got to be able to afford some pretty nifty equipment to, he claims he works 3 days in a cave, like clearing out the cave, and he's got a sore back from it. So it's like this, I found that a little bit hard to believe. Like, you know, he's like, she has him like, he's makeshifting his own, a new sort of
New
like per
cave.
man's bat cave or something. It's like, it's kind of, I got a chuckle out of that.
Yeah, but I think overall it's a good and the other one other thing that I'll mention, I mean, I think it is a good story and a good series. But because it does tie in so closely to what Future State was and with Magistrate and what's going on with in the Batman title, that is one part about the book. And Detective, when Tomasi and Brad Walker first took it over, like that Arkham Knight story arc that they told, and following it up with the Two-Face storyline, those were classic Batman stories where you felt like they could have taken place in any era of Batman. They could have been told back in the 80s, 70s, 90s, any or now, whenever. And you felt it wasn't, because it wasn't so tied into what else was going on in continuity in the DC universe. And it wasn't that their stories contradicted anything, but they were so kind of insulated and just focused on telling a really cool, adventuresome Batman story. And I love that. It just had that classic feel, like an instantly felt like classic Batman. Obviously, this is a complete departure from that. You bring on Tamaki and Mora, and it's very much tied into the Magistrate and the possible future and whatever. And I think I'll miss having a detective comic that felt like, hey, I don't need to know anything that's going on in the DC universe. I'm a Batman fan. I can just pick this up and read it. Now, Tomasi and Walker, they kind of got sucked in. It didn't maintain that sort of separate feel, because you had Year of the Villain, and then you had the Joker War, and they kind of got sucked in, and it was still good, but it didn't have that feel. And I just wish we could have gone back to that, where we have a Batman book where you can just read it and you don't need to know anything else that's going on. So maybe that's just not realistic these days with what editorial wants to do. So that does add in a little bit to my mixed feelings, but this is good. I'm gonna keep reading Detective. I have no plans to stop. I mean, it's one of those series. It's up, above 1,000, and I have a pretty good substantial run, just like I do with Action. So yeah, I'm on board. It's definitely much better than what's going on over in Action Comics these days. So any thoughts about the backup with Damian Wayne?
Well, like you, I was intrigued by the ending. I thought that this was it makes me worry more about where Joshua Williamson is taking this, only because while I'm interested in Connor Hawke arriving on the scene, I don't think he understands Connor Hawke very well. Connor Hawke is a competent fighter, but I wouldn't put him near the best in terms of being in a tournament where this is headed to. So I thought that was a little bit off in terms of the story. I guess mileage will vary. I guess we can argue about how good a fighter Connor Hawke is. I know that his mother is Shadow, and I know his father, of course, is Oliver Queen. So yes, he's a good fighter, but I just thought that, you know, of all the fighters to be afraid of, I just wouldn't put Connor Hawke being up there as one of them. But people can disagree with me on that. In any event, I thought, you know, I thought that he got, when we were first introduced to Damian Wayne here in the first chapter of this, leading into this one, and this will continue in the first issue of Robin. Damian seems to have gone back. Now he wants to side with his mother. He seems to be have an identity crisis. I think that the character is moving backwards, and this is another sign that I don't think Williamson has a clue what he's doing. I'll be honest. I just really don't know. And the fact that we're being distracted by another character, Connor Hawke, at the end just shows that he doesn't have a clue what to do with Damian, that he's not developing Damian's character. Damian, I don't even know why Damian is at his mom's. I don't even know why he left Batman, frankly. Now he's with Talia. And then at the end, he leaves Talia to go out on his own. And then he's going to end up at this tournament probably. This is just a mess. This is character-wise, I think this is a mess in terms of Damian. I don't think Williamson has a clue what he's doing. I don't think he's got a game plan. He did the same nonsense in the Flash. And there's lots of, you know, there's people out there that are fans of his Flash. All the power to you. Pick up his Robin. It'll and I'm sure it'll float your boat. But he's got a habit of just puking out a bunch of characters onto the page, not developing any of them, and having the main character learn the same lesson again and again and again, like he did Barry Allen. And Barry Allen never evolved as a character in 100 issues of writing. And I don't see Damian Wayne being the same. And I realize I'm saying that after only 2 short issues, but that's just how cynical I am with Williamson on this. And I really hope I'm wrong, because honestly, this has all the hallmarks of something I should love. I mean, this has all the hallmarks of like a Mortal Kombat, and I know it's corny and maybe tropey, but I like the idea of a tournament. Damian Wayne going into a tournament, throw in Connor Hark, throw in Richard Dragon, throw in Lady Shiva, throw in, hey, this is all the hallmarks of everything I love, characters I love. So I'm on board, but I'm on board purely because of the characters that he's going to puke on the page, and it's martial arts fighting, and I'm a big fan of that. But as far as a Robin book, this playing out in Robin, frankly, I expect zero character development for Damian Wayne. And in fact, I don't think this is the appropriate title to be playing out a League of Lazarus tournament. I don't think this is appropriate for a Robin book. If I'm brutally honest, this is not the right plot line for Robin. This should be in a different comic book, but that's just me. I might be an outlier. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Connor Hawk. I've always loved the character from the first time when Oliver met him in the monastery. I agree with you in terms of he's nowhere near. I wouldn't even put him in the top 50 of fighters in the DC universe. I almost feel like Joshua Williamson chose him just so he could use the line, "What better way to take out a Robin than with a hawk?"
Yeah,
you know,
it's exactly. Like,
that's why he chose him, because his last name's Hawk. So, but I love Connor Hawk. So I'm curious. I'm curious enough that I'll check out probably the first issue of Robin and see where it goes. But I'm not a big fan of Damian Wayne. For Williamson, I don't dislike his work as much as you do, but I do feel like he started off his Flash run started off strong, and it did get weaker as it went along. And there have been at times where his work has been a little bit inconsistent for me, especially in terms of pacing. So, and consistency. So obviously in the first story I mentioned, we got the first backup in Batman 106 right away. Damian Wayne, to your point, Rocky, about him going backwards, he came across as the, you know, the brat that we were first introduced to in the pages of Batman and Detective when he first came on the scene. And it didn't very much feel like Williamson was taking him backwards, and that he was less evolved as a character, less mature. And then all of a sudden in the second chapter, oh wait, now he's back to the Damian we've seen recently, where he's speaking to his mother in a way that makes sense. And he seems much more mature and much older. I mean, just inconsistency between these part one and part two of Demon or Detective. It's like, what, a 16 or 20 page story, basically, because they're backups and you put them together, you got one issue. So just in terms of if you put them together and it was its own issue, the first half of the issue and the second half of the issue, Damian's character is already inconsistent. That's a problem. So unfortunately, I worry along with Rocky that the characterization of Damian Wayne in this new Robin series from Williamson is not going to be consistent, not from issue to issue, not even within the same issue. But to be honest, I kind of don't care, because I don't care about Damian really. But there is Connor Hawk. There is this really cool idea of this martial arts tournament, and you know, the League of Shadows, the League of Assassins, the League of Lazarus, all those concepts are cool and interesting. So I don't know. This is going to be one of those things where I may take it on an issue by issue basis. I might jump off after the first issue. I may hang around for the second issue and then jump off after that. I don't know. I'm going to take it issue by issue.
You made a very good point I compliment you on, because you articulated it the way that I could not. And that is that, that he's, I don't believe Williamson's going to make me care about Damian Wayne. I'll care about the story, and maybe the story will be good, as I said. But I don't think we're going to get any development of Damian Wayne, and I don't think I'm going to care about Damian Wayne. And I compare that to the original Tomasi run and Gleason, where you cared about Damian Wayne, you cared about his development. I don't see. I just he, automatically, I'm already starting to dislike Damian Wayne, despite seeing the story having potential.
Yeah, and see, for me, I already dislike him, so I see no reason for that to change. But one thing that it, another thing that it does have going for it, this art by Gleb Melnikov, I think it's really good, especially the fact that he does his own colors, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of Greg Capullo in a way, but a little less like a little less polished. It's a little more angular. But you can especially see it, I think, if you look at the final page. Well, what they want to tell you is the final page splash, where he's jumping out of the helicopter. It says to be continued in Robin number one. Oh, but first, and then we get Connor Hawke. But when you see this reminds me a lot of Capullo, especially when you look over here at Talia. I mean, her face in this little inset panel. That looks a lot like Capullo art to me. So I think a lot of people, and I wasn't familiar with any of Gleb Melnikov's work before we heard his name as being the artist on Robin and started to see him in these backups. But I think the art's pretty solid, and I enjoy it. So that might be one of the things that keeps me coming back. I do wonder about him being able to keep up the pace of doing the art and the colors for a monthly book, and that'll definitely be something that gets me to jump right off if the book starts being late. I'm just gonna, nope, not gonna bother to put out the effort to try to track it down and know when each issue is coming out. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. I haven't heard, I haven't been paying attention to the solicits. Do you happen to know, Rocky? So what we know we're gonna continue to get backups in Batman and Detective. Do you know what is gonna replace this Robin backup?
I don't. I haven't really been paying much attention to the solicits, to
Yeah,
be
neither have
honest.
I.
So,
So I hope it's something good, and that's all I can say.
well, I
Before.
know that we're getting a price increase, aren't we? I understand we're getting a price
Yeah,
increase for
so
these.
yeah, I heard we're getting a price increase, but then I also heard that that was a mistake, and basically the extra dollars is still only going to be for the cardstock covers and not the regular covers. But I don't know. Unfortunately, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, AT&T is trying to dig themselves out of the hole, and I'm sorry, AT&T, as we've said many times, you're not going to dig yourself out of the hole selling comic books. You shouldn't have bought DirecTV. Why don't you dig yourself out of the hole by stop paying your CEOs millions and millions of dollars that's undeserved? But that's a topic for a whole different sort of podcast. So,
Yes, it is.
yeah, let's move on to the last book we're going to talk about. This is probably my favorite book of the week. I thought it was brilliantly done. It's Batman and Superman, number 16, written by Jingwen Yang. We've got pencils by Yvonne Reese. Inks are by Danny Mickey, which I found to be interesting because that's not the normal inker that Yvonne Reese normally works with. Normally, he works with Joe Prado or Albert Eau Claire or both. And Sabine Rich does the colors. Saida Temafonte does the letters. So that might have been why when, and I had forgotten, I think I knew or had heard that Yvonne Reese was going to be doing the art for this, but then I had forgotten. And when the art kicked off, I read the first couple pages. I was like, man, this art's really good. Wait, who is this? And it wasn't until I got to the first big splash page that I realized, oh yeah, it's Yvonne Reese. So I'll chalk up my not recognizing it to the fact that it wasn't his regular inker. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention. Yeah, I thought this was brilliantly done and really, really good. What did you think, Rocky?
Oh, it really was, and I'm gonna be interesting to know how you read this, because I love at the very beginning you're invited to read the stories together or read them separately. I mean, it says it right on the cover: two worlds, two heroes, double the danger. And there's literally two stories, and as you alluded to, Jace, there's it's like. It's like two film strips, one on top of the other. The top one is Superman in the world of tomorrow, and the bottom one is Batman and Robin in the world of the night. And you can, and I read the Superman one first, and I'm glad I did. And then I went back and I read the Batman one second, which is on the bottom. And they came together at the end, and these two worlds were these two different movie universes, these old time movie serial movies converged at the end. And it was just, it was easy to follow. I thought I was, for some reason, I thought I was going to be confused. It sort of caught me off guard because I'm used to sort of like I'm wondering where's this all going, and the villains were different, and everything seemed diff off, and but yet it was it the art, Ivan Reis's art was fantastic. Colors are beautiful. Inking, you say, is fantastic. Just a beautiful job. And these two adventures, you know, where you get, you know, Batman battling what you think what is battling this Lex Luthor, and and then in the bottom you got Batman battling battling this what's her name,
Spider Lady? Was that what
Spider
they?
Lady, yeah.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, at the end when they the stories converge, you know, Lois Lane gets thrown into the Batman story and is actually recognized as being the Spider Lady by Batman, and it's and that's kind of an interesting cliffhanger. So why where's this all going? And then it ends up that it's because they're in space. There's in Earth Zero in the in what they call the thermosphere. The Batman and Superman are investigating an infestation of Wayne Tech satellite machinations of some kind, and there's this alien race there, and for the sacrilege of trespassing upon the archive of worlds, they're going to be destroyed, and so it's almost like it's the these aliens are preserving a film archive of a Batman and Superman adventure, and they're and the real world is converging and breaking the fourth wall into another one, and it's really imaginative. And I gotta say, man, you know, Yang has really impressed the hell out of me. This is exactly the type of delightful story that I like to read. It's disconnected from other stories. It's easy to catch on to. It's fun. It's adventurous. It's intriguing. It's you want to go back to reread at the beginning. You want to see how the stories connect. It's easy to follow. It's not complicated. It's actually fun. There's nothing better than a comic book that you want to read again because it's fun to read. And this was just a joy. And kudos to Ivan Reis, Mickey on the inks, and Sabine Rich on the colors. Everything here just really popped off the page. It really hit me in all the right spots.
Yeah, I agree. It was, I mean, you used a word there, and that's exactly the perfect word. This comic is so much fun. Reminds us how fun comics can be. I mean, this idea that these aliens are archiving things on film, like what's going on? I mean, Superman is talking about, hey, this infestation, it looks like old film, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels very ephemeral. There's, you know, is there some kind of magic or technology going on? Then we get a chance to see the aliens for the first time in this last panel. The fact that their heads look like old time movie cameras, it's just so cool. So, I planned on reading it the same way that you did, Rocky. When we, you know, we got you mentioned it. We get to the front here, and it tells us, you know, you have these two different film strips, and you can read them, you know, one at a time, or you can read them simultaneously. The choice is yours. And so my plan was, okay, I'm gonna read, you know, the Superman one's on top, the World of Tomorrow. I'm gonna read that one first. And so, you know, I got to this first splash page, and I started reading, you know, I got to the end here of the film strip, and I was planning on turning the next page, and then I just happened to glance down, and I'm like, well, God, the art here looks so beautiful, and you know, I'm just let me just read this real quick to just to see, and then I'll go back and I'll just read the Superman and come back to the Batman. But the thing was, this story, I mean, it was just as good. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up reading them simultaneously, which normally, and I've talked about this before, when we've had stories where there's a narrator, like Avengers: No Road Home is a perfect example. There's a lot of those issues where one of the characters is narrating it, and what they're saying as they look back on the events that happened don't necessarily match up with what the characters and the action are saying in the word balloons. And it's sort of like you're getting two narratives. And I find that to be very disjointed. And so usually I'll read, you know, the narration first, and then I'll go back and read the action. And here I couldn't do that. They were both so compelling and both so interesting, and the art looked so great. And plus, as I was reading them both, you can see the differences and so, some ways that these two stories kind of tie into each other. And then the thing that had me just constantly intrigued and kept coming back was the fact that there were little nods to things like the fact, like you're wondering, okay, what timeline is this that they're talking about? Because you see Superman with this S, and you wonder, okay, well, that's like the golden age version of Superman, right? But then wait, Jimmy Olsen has a camera drone, so clearly we're in the future. There's flying drones, so it can't be golden age Superman when there's flying drones. Like what? And I was just trying to figure it out. And so throughout the whole thing, from seeing Superman's rocket, which to me, I thought that this the warden of Arkham. Did you get the feeling this was Hugo Strange or Jim Gordon? Because I wasn't sure. I both of those kind of flashed into my head, and I couldn't.
I was it's actually funny you should say that because yeah I got the same open question. I wasn't I'm not sure. You know, I
Yeah,
was
but yeah, I was
I
just gonna
was
say.
more intrigued by Alfred as turning into Bane.
Oh yeah, that was another cool moment at the end here. We see when Lois is sort of sneaking around Wayne Manor. And yeah, here we go with Alfred turning into Bane. I mean, yeah, just really cool ideas where Gene Luen Yang is just he's just having fun, and we're having fun along with him because he's taking all these cool ideas and just throwing them together and saying, "Hey, let's have fun." And the fact that most of the comic is laid out with double page spreads, almost the whole book, where you get the Superman story along the film strip, Superman story along the top, the Batman one along the bottom. The art is spectacular, the colors, everything works. Even though everything is off, like Rocky said, with wait, who's this Warden of Arkham? Is it Hugo Strange? Is it Jim Gordon? Maybe it's a mashup of the two of them. Why is Lois Lane the Spider Lady villain in one reality and she's Lois Lane in the other? Why is Alfred turning into Bane? I mean, just all these kooky, crazy ideas that. You know, normally you might think, well, that's not the way it's supposed to work. That's not in continuity or whatever. But here it works because at the end, you know, beautifully paced and perfect reveal. Hey, here's these aliens. God knows what they've tried to record and preserve and how they've gotten everything all screwed up and what that portends for Batman and Superman. Who knows? So this wasn't at all what I expected for the first issue of Batman Superman from Yang, you know, because we talked when we were reviewing his Future State stuff about how he really gets who the characters are at their core, like emotionally, and he kind of played into that their friendship and how much they care about each other and how much respect they have for each other. And so you kind of think, okay, well, maybe he's probably going to lean into that for the first arc. And instead, he goes totally the other direction and goes, you know what? If you've read my Superman, you should know that. Who I think Superman is. So let's, instead of doing that, let's just put the pedal to metal and have fun with this crazy high concept film, old school film, alien kind of thing. And man, I mean, brilliantly laid out. I don't know if it was his idea or Yvonne Reese or a collaboration to lay it out with those film strips with, you know, one story on top and one on the bottom. But this is one of the best comics I've read in a while, man. This one just put a smile on my face.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be interesting to see what he does in the next chapter and how he finishes this story. I'm longing. I want the film strip stories to continue,
Yeah, yeah.
even though they're not the real story, because we know that, you know, it teases next issue that Batman and Superman are going to be together for the first time in this story, really, because we've been seeing two imaginary stories within the imaginary story. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, man. It's a, like I say, it puts a big smile on your face.
Yeah, it was spectacular. So, in addition to these, there's three other DC titles coming out today. Let me give you the rundown really quick, and we'll give our just real quick thoughts on them. We have the Batman White Knight presents Harley Quinn number 6. We also have Action Comics number 1029, which finishes off of that first kind of the first Philip Kennedy Johnson Superman story. And then there's also the Batman Black and White number 4, which is the anthology series, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Rocky, you didn't get a chance to read that one, did you? Batman Black and White.
Sorry, I never read the Batman, but Black and White, I did
Okay, so
not. Sorry.
yeah, let me give my thoughts on that just real quickly. I was telling Rocky before we started that I feel like this version of Batman Black and White is kind of the weakest version of Batman Black and White that we've ever gotten, unfortunately. And I think that's in terms of art and story. So I hate to say I'm disappointed, but I've been kind of disappointed in it because in the past they've been such great stories, and I don't know why this one just didn't click for me. That being said, in this particular issue, there is a Batman story by Chip Zdarsky that when I got finished reading it, I just thought, man, I feel bad that I ever thought Chip Zdarsky wasn't a good writer based on his Howard the Duck series, because it's spectacular. The story that he tells here is great. But the other aspect of the I just feel like the art has felt so muddy throughout this entire Batman Black and White series, and I don't know why I feel that way. I didn't feel that way about the Zdarsky, and I'll show you just real quickly. The artwork is done by Nick Bradshaw, and it's even for black and white artwork, it's pretty clean, and there's a lot of detail in it. You can see he fights against Poison Ivy, and he Zdarsky leans into the whole idea of kind of saving the world and Ivy's desire to kind of end pollution and that sort of thing. So it does work, but overall, I felt like this Batman Black and White was kind of the weakest volume we've had of it yet. So yeah, I mean the stories are okay, the Zdarsky one being the best, but I wouldn't recommend you pick this up just based on that one story because it's just too expensive for that. So anyway, moving on. I thought that the Batman White Knight Harley Quinn, it ended the series. I enjoyed the series quite a bit more than I expected to. Again, I'm not a big Harley Quinn fan, but the fact is that Katana Collins, the writer, along with Sean Gordon Murphy, they give us a version of Harley that's much more mature and much less zany, which is the version of Harley that I prefer. So along with the great art by Matteo Scalero, I thought that series was really great. So if you've been reading it all along, it comes to a very satisfying conclusion. I thought it was good. What were your thoughts, Rocky?
Well, of the yeah the Gordon the what is it this
Batman White
Gordon
Knight, Harley Quinn,
right
the
Batman
Sean Gordon verse, I guess you'd call it.
yeah Sean Gordon verse yeah whatever yeah I really enjoy this. I like this is a universe that is actually very different in multiple levels because this is a potential Harley Quinn Batman romance. It's hinted at here. Harley Quinn, Batman is in jail from flowing from the storyline from the previous stories in the White Knight universe. And Harley Quinn is really Gotham's Batman, and it's she's coming into her own here. And I like the use of coloring in this final issue, where she's incorporating more yellow, and she's incorporating a lot of the a lot of she's sort of gray, black, and yellow and red there, and a little bit of a hood, and she's coming into her own, and she's battling the villain of called Starlet, who is the mother of actually another police detective. And she's coming into her own, and at the same time she's reconciling her feelings for the Joker, who is of course gone, and she's got two kids she's raising. Meanwhile, Bruce Wayne himself is keeping an eye on her from prison as best he can, and it does come to a satisfying conclusion with hints of more to come. And this is really good. If I'm so glad that DC has allowed at least one writer to continue to explore, the Murphy verse. That's the word I was looking for. The Murphy. I was going to say Snyder verse, but it's the Murphy verse. And I love the Murphy verse. I want to see more Harley Quinn in the Murphy verse. And now I can't believe I'm saying this. I want to see Harley Quinn get it on with Bruce Wayne, Batman for a while. What the hell?
Yeah,
Mix
if
it
it's
up.
gonna yeah, if it's gonna happen, this is the universe to make it happen. And so
Yeah.
last title that comes out this week is Superman Action Comics number 1029. So Philip Kennedy Johnson writing, Phil Hester on pencils, Eric Gapster on inks, Hi-Fi on colors. Like I said, it finishes off the first story. I kind of felt like, what was the point of it? It hasn't grabbed me. It's not compelling. I thought it was subpar. I actually thought the backup with Midnighter by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad with art by Michael Avon Oeming was better, was the more interesting story. And I didn't particularly like that story. So I don't really have much else to say. I mean, I just didn't like this. It wasn't, it felt like it didn't matter. It felt like just, you know how back in the day, Rocky, we when something would go bad and the publishers all had those fill-in stories, you know, they'd have them in a file cabinet in the back of the room. And if, you know, somebody got sick at the last minute or there's something wrong with, you know, one part of the production process or whatever, you'd get a fill-in issue at the last minute that you weren't expecting. You know, like you're reading along in the story arc and then all of a sudden the next issue's like, oh, in the regular story, the guy just got knocked out and he's remembering this fight from, you know, way back when would that be how they do it and put in this, I can't remember what they used to call them. They had a term for them, for the stories. I'm drawing a blank.
Backups needed to save the story. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. They called them like stock stories or something like that, but that's not the term. But anyway, that's what this felt like. This felt like, okay, here's a story that we're going to throw in here that doesn't really have any consequences or any meaning or any value because we need to get the regular creative team back on track. So yeah, I didn't like it, but I don't know, maybe now that this first story, which we had the first chapter in Superman, second chapter in Action, now we're going to have two different narratives. One story arc is going to be going on in Superman. The other story arc is going to be going on in Action. They're not going to cross over. Maybe it'll get better from Philip Kennedy Johnson. I hope so, because I just didn't think this was very good. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, part of me felt that this Action Comics, this is Action Comics 1029. The story told is part two of a story called The Golden Age. And what I thought was interesting and what I thought like was well done, I thought, was the idea of the Golden Age. It wasn't referring to the Golden Age of Superman. It's referring to the Golden Age within the story when a son discovers that a father is not invulnerable, that our fathers are imperfect, that they can die, that when we can see them, you know, they're, you know, because our fathers are like gods to us when we're younger. And we always think of them. We always, you know, when you have a good relationship with a parent, with a dad, you love them and you can't help but feel that they're invulnerable, but you reach a certain age and we've all been there where suddenly you can see your parents' age. You can see that they're not young anymore. You can see that they're vulnerable. You can see that they're not perfect and you know that they're going to die one day. And actually, you know, I don't want to get, you know, again, I can actually speak to this a little bit because my parents are getting older and my dad's had some health scares in the last few years. I actually felt this story a little bit, even though I'm perfectly right up there with some of the criticisms of this story. I actually like the message of this story, that's the golden age that was lost here. And that this is the story that Superman that tells John, because John Kent, he recognizes events as being that could lead to his father's death based on what he knew from the future during his time in the 31st century. And, you know, and at the end, you know, Kal-El, you know, tells his son that, you know, tells him the story that his father told him that, you know, it's okay. It's okay to feel what you're feeling. And, you know, that's just the way things are. And, I thought it wasn't bad. Everybody falls and that's okay, you know. And yeah, well, and so now some of the things I didn't like, I think it's a little bit absurd that John knows all this about his father's fate in the future, and I think he knows a little bit too much. I'm not really sure how Mongol's underlings know that Superman is dying from this. It seems a lot of the plot points, I think, seem to be a little bit forced. I think a lot of this storyline, I think Philip Kennedy Johnson, he's trying to tell a good feel-good story of Superman, but yet he's trying to create a plot-centric storyline, and the two are kind of, they're not really fitting in very well. And Phil Hester does not do a very good job here of conveying the emotion that this type of story conveyed. It, with the right artist, if we could have had a different artist on this story, the emotions, we really should have seen more emotions on the faces. This was an emotional story. This could have had a greater emotional impact on me, because this spoke to me. And if this would have had better art, I might even have shed a tear. I attribute that to the art. That's just me, but I think that this is a bad mix of artist and writer. It happens. And as far as the backup story on Midnighter, in the future, this carries on with the Future State storyline, with Andre Trojan is a leader of Trojan Industries, and he's got desires to basically turn himself into a robot, hell bent on destroying all organic life. We know he becomes a full fledged robot in Future State. Well, Midnighter has traveled back in time. Essentially, his essence has traveled back in time, and he's now trying to prevent that future from occurring. So this is kind of almost like a Terminator story, but in trying to reignite his supercomputer brain, Midnighter ends up getting this Andre Trojan, this future version of Andre Trojan, trapped in his brain as well. So now he's got like this dark passenger, and that's the title of the backup story, The Dark Passenger. He's got this voice in his head now that talks to him, and that's Andre Trojan. It reminds me of Dexter, that's psycho killer series. You know, Dexter always referred to his other voice as the dark passenger, whispering things, making him be a psychopath. And so that's the challenge that the Midnighter has now. So that's kind of an interesting element. So how do you prevent a bad future from happening, of a bad guy manifesting, when the bad guy from the future is actually in your head in the present, when you're trying to prevent the very future of the bad guy coming to pass, who's now in your head? So it's kind of a crazy scenario, but it's half-ass interesting. It salvages a little bit of my disappointment from Midnighter during Future State.
I've never been a big Midnighter guy, and I'm not a big fan of Amon Omi's art either, but yeah, this was compelling enough. And one thing I do find interesting, the guy's name is Trojan. You didn't see this coming, Midnighter. You didn't see this. You took the computer literally out of his head, out of his physical robot head. You took the computer out and put it in your own, and you didn't see him tagging along. His name is Trojan. It's right there in the name, buddy.
I never thought of Trojan horse. I just thought of condoms. It's like, why would you name a character after a condom?
What are you doing, DC? I will admit that the second half of the story, of this Golden Age story, was way better than the first. I thought the first half was a total mess. This one, it did get me thinking a little bit, like you mentioned, and there were some good points, but it wasn't enough to overcome for me the sloppy start, and like you said, the art. And in the end, I just felt like, okay, you're trying to tell an emotional Superman story about fathers and sons, and that's, those kind of stories have been told before with Superman, usually with Superman and his father Jonathan Kent, not his son Jonathan Kent, Pa Kent, if you will. And so it's been done before, and it's been done better in my mind. So yeah, this one just didn't quite click for me. But anyway, that's going to do it for the DC books this week, everybody. Anything you have coming up on the channel that you want to tease, Rocky?
Well, I did. Just today, I released my review of Earth One, Wonder Woman Volume 3 by Grant Morrison. And that's 45 minutes long. It's a long review. I also released a 7-minute synopsis, a Cole's Notes version, a bullet points of some of the aspects of it. And as far as our reviews coming out later this week, nothing. I can't think of anything. I'm probably going to do a couple of back issues. I'm going to probably show off some of my collection a little bit. I got that idea building on what your suggestion, and I might, I've got a couple things on the gun that I'm still working on right now, but I can't mention right now, but I got a few things in the pike.
Gotcha. I recently did a live video with some other contributors from LRM about the Snyder Cut. I actually watched it on the first day. As much as I don't like Zack Snyder, I did watch it 4 hours and 2 minutes, and it took me like 7 hours with all the interruptions, over 7 hours to watch it. And I guess I'm kind of glad all those interruptions happened, because I don't think I could have sat and watched it straight through for 4 hours. It's just so long. But you checked it out as well and seemed to like it quite a bit, right?
I did. Yeah. I, and it wasn't just me. I watched it with family. I watched, there was five of us, and we were, frankly, we put it on the projector. We projected it on the wall. We had popcorn. We had our break after I think it was after the fourth chapter. We had our bathroom break, and we were captivated by it. We were glued to it. And we're not, not everyone watching is a diehard superhero fan, but I thought, I think emotionally it worked. I thought character-wise it worked. It was entertaining. The action was great. It felt like a different movie, which is what I liked. And it's like, I mean, just to summarize quickly, if you're not into Snyder and you don't like his what you might consider to be his pretentious approach to storytelling and his special effects and his soundtracks and his certain style, then this isn't going to change your mind. But if you're somebody like me who really felt that the Justice League was a really shitty movie and you just wanted it flushed out a little bit more, this at least tells me what could have been. What could have been. It's still not is not going to make everyone happy, and maybe it still would have sucked in the long run, but this is a better movie, and I do think that he's achieved a little bit of redemption from this than what he originally had.
Fair enough. I thought it was better too. If you want more detailed thoughts, go check that out, LRM online. For me, coming up later this week, we're going to continue with the Flashback Fridays with some DC titles that lead up to Year of the Villain and Dark Knight Death Metal. I will also be doing a spotlight that drops this Friday on Berserker. So if you're curious about that Matt Kent, Keanu Reeves written title from Boom, be sure you go and check that out. So. Again, we want to thank everybody for watching or listening. We really appreciate the support as always. Again, if you're on YouTube checking us out, be sure you hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and let us know if you have any questions or comments or anything like that in the comments below. Go ahead and check out the show notes for our links to social media. Be sure you're giving us a follow there. You can eavesdrop in on our conversations that we have with creators and whatnot. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thanks for listening as always, and we will talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.